All right, I'd like to call to order the Metro Council meeting of July 25th, 2019. And yes, this is a statement on our new AC system. But it is a Metro hat, so I feel like I'm totally within the realm of appropriate decor. So we are all here. I will now ask Councillor Dirksen to read the safety briefing.
Thank you, Madam President. In the interest of safety, please note that we are on the third floor of this building and our emergency exit is on the second floor. So in the event of a fire or a fire alarm, please exit out through the doors in the northeast corner of the room and go down the stairs to the second floor and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. And we will all meet together in the courtyard outside that entrance. In the event of a medical or a fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk as you hurry past. If the nearest defibrillator is mounted on the landing of the steps leading down from the reception desk to Grand Avenue, and if there are fire extinguishers located in the corridor to my left in that corridor, and also to the left of the elevators out in the hallway.
Thank you. We'll move next to public communication. If anyone wishes to testify on a non-agenda item, now would be the time to do so. If you have the opportunity to fill out a blue card with your name and topic, that would be great. And we have five people signed up today. So I will call up two at a time to roll us through, and you have 3 minutes. The first two are Katie Larzell and John Mulvey. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, my name is Katie Larzell, and I so appreciate this opportunity to be able to speak before you today. I wanted to tell you just a little bit about myself. I moved to East Portland in 1989, so I've lived there for a long time, and I've been very involved in the community. I started out as on the Park Rose School Board. And while I was there, I really found my spiritual and political center in East Portland. Since then, I became involved with the East Portland Action Plan. I was one of the original community members that were part of that plan when it was a planning exercise, and then moved on to working for the community as a part of the East Portland Action Plan. So I am also on the Planning and Sustainability Commission. And as a member of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we have been looking at the issues around residential infill for over 2 years. And I actually was one of the people on the commission that voted against the plan. And it wasn't because of the density. I was actually for that. But I was worried for East Portland, because I knew that it would have the most dramatic effect there. And I was worried that it would have a destabilizing influence and that it would cause a lot of people to have to leave the neighborhood. They wouldn't be able to afford it. So anyway, that is why I was so interested in that grant that unfortunately did not make the cut. And I wanted to object. I think it should have made the cut. And the grant got started with Robert Liberty and I talking together about how, when RIP comes in, which it now is because of 2001 from the legislature, when RIP comes in, property values are going to go up. How can low-income property owners capture that? And that is where that idea for that grant came from, allowing low-income property owners to capture the value that is inherent in that whole setup and that change. So, I mean, it doesn't get any more equity than that. And I just wanted to, end by saying that I wanted to tell you one of my favorite spiritual sayings. And this is a spiritual saying that you will not find in the Bible. You won't find it in the Quran. It's follow the money. Because when you follow the money, I don't know what I did there.
That's okay.
But it must have been incantatory.
There you go.
When you follow the money, it shows you where your heart is. And the fact of the matter is that you had $1 million dedicated to equity, and you did not spend it all.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is John Mulvey, and I serve as co-chair of the Housing Committee of the East Portland Action Plan, and I believe you're getting a copy of what I am going to read. Let me tell you about East Portland. We are the fastest growing area of Portland. Multnomah County found that rents here have been rising more than 20 times faster than median incomes. These rising housing costs have upended the lives of our low-income neighbors and have been particularly disruptive to communities of color. The Oregonian, in analyzing the stark disparity in economic resilience between East Portland and the rest of the city, found that in the years since the 2007 mortgage crisis, most people living in neighborhoods between I-205 and Portland's western boundary saw an increase in their median incomes, while the opposite is true for people east of the interstate. We are home to more than 40% of Portland's children. In its 2014 five-year report, the Portland Children's Levy said that poverty rates and racial ethnic diversity have increased in this part of the city, particularly for children. They also noted that children of color experience a significant achievement gap and that fewer social and supportive services are located east of 82nd Avenue, which makes it more difficult for higher-risk populations to access services. In 2015, the Oregon Department of Human Services identified 4 high-poverty hotspots in East Portland, citing in particular the disproportionately high number of renters and increased likelihood of families changing residences even as compared to other low-income communities throughout Oregon. Think about that. People are more likely to be forcibly moved around in East Portland than equivalent low-income people in other areas of the state. Their report noted that children who move frequently are more likely to experience academic and social challenges in school. Changes that we know are coming have a strong likelihood of driving additional housing instability for East Portland's most vulnerable people. We will be deeply impacted by the new residential upzoning mandated by the city's residential infill project and the legislature's recent passage of HB 2001. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability found that under RIP, Brentwood Darlington, Lentz, and parts of the Montevilla neighborhood east of 82nd Avenue are likely to see significant increases in redevelopment that could lead to the increased displacement of vulnerable households. RIP will drive new speculation in undervalued properties in East Portland. BPS suggests that we may see predatory real estate and lending practices similar to what we saw during the mortgage crisis 10 years ago. We will almost certainly see upward pressure on rents. I'll skip to the end, but I'm just want to express my disappointment that Metro does not seem interested in partnering with our community on addressing these inequities, and I hope you'll change your mind. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in today. Got 2 more folks coming up, Peg Malloy and Robert Liberty.
I get to speak before Robert Liberty. This could be a once in a lifetime. I'm Peg Malloy. I'm with the Portland Housing Center. We're a home buying center over in Northeast Portland. I guess we are in Northeast Portland. We work with our pipeline right now is about 1,600 first-time home buyers, and each year about 400 buy homes. They buy homes mostly in the Outer East Side, because they've been pushed out in the more central areas. As far as this particular grant, my interest in it is that the wealth creation aspect of it, that people who have been pushed out of Northeast, even Southeast, in the inner city Southeast, have gone into this area. They've bought homes over the years, and to be able to stay in those homes because of the cost, the ADU is a great option. It's kind of people going from what they say the numbers, the alphabet to the numbers. It's just one more push to be able to stay in that neighborhood, to be able to stay and own, and what an ADU provides you is an ability to do that. People haven't been able to do that in these kind of areas because there isn't the equity buildup like you have in the central city, where equity, the appreciation that we have in our values in the more central city has given us equity to be able to build ADUs. Some of us, like myself, built an ADU so that when we retire on our nonprofit salary that we can actually stay in the inner Northeast. So I do think in this application, when it comes back around, that it's good to look at that there isn't anything that's going to say this demand. There isn't any good way to finance ADUs except using your equity on your house and as well as a line of credit. And when you're in an outer east side neighborhood, you don't have a whole lot of equity. So this kind of planning grant will bring possibilities, opportunities to those homeowners in the inner south or the outer southeast area. And I really encourage you at some point when this comes back around to take a consideration, because I think we need to keep the homeowners in those areas. The trend now, as I watch homeownership and second buyers, they're going to go further and further out on the east side. When you hear that Fairview is now considering affordable home ownership that never talked to us before, it's just the trend. We tried to do some programming in Vancouver, and people aren't going north, maybe because of those damn bridges, but that's another issue. But I'd really encourage taking a look at those possibilities like ADUs, where people could actually earn an income. You provide another rental unit, because as we see more high-rises go up, we see more people moving out into the outer east side. So again, encouragement to take another look at the ADU possibility for a way to keep homeowners in the outer east side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, members of the council, I want to talk a little bit about some things about the grant that you may not know about, because I know some of the concerns expressed in the staff report. First of all, by way of background, I got interested in housing and equity issues in the 1990s. That's where I met Sam Chase. That's where the Coalition for a Livable Future came from. Metro wasn't addressing any of those issues at the time. I followed it in the council, and that's how I got involved in the East Portland Action Plan. So Katie made a brief reference to the origin of this grant. It really was, I had a different grant in mind. I was going to talk to the City of Portland. That was my next appointment. And I talked to Katie, and I realized, oh, my gosh, they already have the issue served up. They have a method. They have a communication network. They have principles for engagement in the community. That's what we'll propose. Really, that's what happened. So the other thing that was important and informing is I've been working on ADUs as a strategy not just to increase housing supply but equity, that is wealth creation and affordability, since August of 2016. And I've been doing this not only in this region but with teams in Seattle, Washington, D.C., and Charlottesville, Virginia, and now talking about financing in Los Angeles, Denver, and Minneapolis, a couple other communities. This is a very exciting time in housing finance. There are a lot of opportunities, and there are a lot of different roles that would be played, and this is very unlike other grant proposals to you, by the private sector, by the nonprofit sector, and private for-profit, nonprofit, and public sectors all can play a role in dealing with a set of challenges. Those challenges have been identified and discussed: access to capital, design and construction, site suitability, management of the unit. These are all things we think there are solutions, and no one in the United States, as far as I can tell, is actually trying to tackle something at scale, which is how do you keep people in neighborhoods so that the wave of gentrification is something they surf and does not wash them away. There is no precedent. It's not like doing a plan for South Cooper Mountain. It's not being done. But because of what's happening nationally and the capacity of the organizations like East Portland Action Plan and others that we've mentioned in our application, we think there's a chance to innovate and experiment. So I'm going to give you something that I'm not going to try and go through, which is, might be helpful later, an outline of each one of the challenges and the role that can be played by the private sector, the nonprofit sector, and the public sector in developing a response that, again, allows people to stay in their homes. Age in place is also important. Keep economic diversity in the neighborhoods. And we are, I think, we're on the verge not only of displacement, but of a potentially really valuable solution. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about that. Also give you the city's displacement analysis. And so I only have one map, but I think it's just interesting as a tool of looking at what's likely to happen in those cases.
Thank you all for coming in on that topic, and there's more conversation to come, so much appreciated, and we look forward to next steps. Last but not least, Art Llewellyn.
Good afternoon, Council. My name is Art Llewellyn, and I've been to these Thursday afternoon public commentary periods to further my own advocacy for a proper advanced mass transit system for Portland and for cities across the country. I have submitted some materials. I think I have one new one that states notes on NATO Parkway Max Subway Plan, which I've been working on for the last 4 years. I think that's a new one. Council has looked at the other maps, but they're a little bit updated. And while I address the council, I also want to say that I'm addressing the people who may be watching on television, the community television programs that carries this. And I want those folks to know that if they have any concerns about the way the city metro addresses public concerns, I want them to know that unless you agree with them, they're not going to address your concerns. They're not. And I state that with regret, because I do support Metro and a lot of the work that it does, but it is, I believe, making a terrible mistake with the Barber Max Boulevard project altogether. It is more suitable for bus rapid transit, and I've been suggesting that as a space-saving measure that an independent bus rapid transit study be authorized, and if that does not happen, then a legal recourse will, I have no doubt, occur, and I think it will happen within 3 months, or begin to happen within 3 months. And I have no doubt that a case will come before any court, and the Barber Max Porter Power just will be determined not suitable. And I don't just take that out of thin air. I've laid out proposals that to defend that case and to defend buses for the corridor, defend alternate routes for light rail to reach Tigard and Tualatin via the West Corridor, convert the West to a red line extension. A saving measure is to do something to prevent going to court, to prevent a project that is not worth doing. I can't, in 3 minutes, describe just how badly that project has gone. But it will go to court. Well, I used my 3 minutes. That's how it works, folks. Sorry, Council. I'm doing my best for the right thing for Portland. So hope I don't see you in court.
All right. Thank you. Before I close, is there anybody else who wishes to testify on a non-agenda item? Before I close the non-agenda item portion of our public testimony? Seeing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Today's consent agenda consists of two items, resolution number 19-5004, the purpose of confirming the reappointment of Daniel Milan to the Metropolitan Exposition Recreation Commission, and two, consideration of the council meeting minutes for July 11th, 2019. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Been moved by Councillor Lewis.
Second.
Seconded by Councillor Stacey. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion passes. Thank you. We have one resolution today. It is resolution number 19-5002 for the purpose of approving the fiscal year 2019-2020 funding for 2040 planning and development grants funded with construction excise tax. I'm going to ask our Metro Planning and Development Director, Alyssa Gertler, to come forward, and the chair of the 2040 Planning and Development Grant Committee, Damian Hall. Oh, you can sit together. You're not going to kill each other, right? Oh, and I'm sorry, there was more.
Okay.
One more. And we've got Lisa Miles from the Metro Planning staff for a presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Council President Peterson, members of the Metro Council. My name is Lisa Miles, and I manage the 2040 Planning and Development Grants Program. I'm pleased to be here today to talk to you about the awards cycle for the seventh cycle of grant awards. As you know, the 2040 Planning and Development Grants are funded through a construction excise tax. And the applications ultimately recommended by the committee for grants awards are those that most clearly align with the program's central mission to support planning and pre-development activities that remove barriers to development, make land ready for development, and enable existing developed sites to be redeveloped. Proposals in the equitable development category also demonstrate a primary emphasis on advancing equity, in particular racial equity. In April, earlier this year, COO Martha Bennett appointed a diverse 9-member screening committee to review this year's grant submissions. They have a very broad background and expertise in the private, nonprofit, and public sectors. Members of the screening committee applied all of their collective wisdom to consider the proposals which had clear and achievable goals and which they felt would be most likely to facilitate impactful development outcomes in alignment with both local and regional aspirations. The committee received a total of 10 proposals this year submitted by 5 local governments and one private organization. This is the first year that private entities were eligible to apply for grants with the endorsement of a local government partner. And the combined funding requested was nearly $3.5 million. On behalf of the Metro staff, I really want to sincerely thank all of the members of the committee for generously contributing their time and expertise to the grant review process. Their insights and recommendations for the program are extremely valuable to us. The committee submitted its recommendations to Interim Chief Operating Officer Andrew Scott on June 24th, recommending that 7 projects be funded for a total of $2,428,000. Damian Hall serves as the chair of the Grant Screening Committee, and he's graciously joined me today to share the committee's recommendations regarding this year's grant awards.
Thank you, Lisa. And thank you for the opportunity, Council, to speak to you today. My name is Damian Hall. I'm a partner with the law firm of Paul Janik. I also serve as chair of the Grant Recommendation Committee. I'm going to give just sort of a kind of high-level summary of each of the recommendations in the 3 categories, and feel free to ask questions. I'm glad to provide commentary about the discussions that were had at the committee and any kind of background that you may be interested in. All right, so starting with the equitable development category, I believe this is the second cycle that Metro's had an equitable development category and prioritized that as far as having set aside funding specifically for that category. Local governments across the region are increasingly focused on racial equity. However, as we'll talk about a little bit, some of them are kind of struggling to find their voice in that and figure out what the best approaches are. So one of the things that is part of the recommendation on a going forward basis is to kind of fine tune that and keep working on improving this category as a whole and how it's applied. So jumping into the specifics, the Albina Vision Trust, that's a local nonprofit who's the actual applicant and proposer, but is supported by the City of Portland. They're talking about putting together a community-driven process that many of you are familiar with and have a vision for what the Rose Quarter could be redeveloped as in a way that basically is intended to heal some wounds from past public actions and be really community-driven. This particular proposal talks about not sort of what the end vision is, but how to put together an investment prospectus, to kind of find innovative ways to raise public and private capital to help their vision become a reality. And so the committee was very impressed with sort of how this application epitomizes kind of equitable development in the sort of community up model of kind of who's driving the car and figuring out what's best for an area. Moving on to the application from Prosper Portland for Coley Community Centered Equitable Development. This is, really taking a deep dive on figuring out how to retool and utilize effectively an old tool, urban renewal, but in a way that has, gives voice to the community and hopefully allows everyone to avoid some of the, negative symptoms of large-scale urban renewal projects past. It'll be it's proposed to be community-led operation with the Coley community, various Coley community partners. I think there's six or seven different nonprofit organizations that are involved in concert with Prosper Portland. And the committee was impressed, again, sort of with the ground-up grassroots lead on this. Prosper Portland is matching funds. The committee recommended less of an award than was actually requested, and that analysis was kind of based on taking a look at what prior urban renewal awards had been given in other jurisdictions and bringing this project kind of more in line with that. So we think that the proposed award, although on the smaller end of the awards, with the match money from Prosper Portland, we think sufficient to do the scope of work that's been laid out. Clackamas County, they proposed initially a countywide corridors analysis. So the committee wrestled with that a little bit. And wrestled a little bit with, I would just say it this way, compared to the first two projects I've talked about, there it was less of a depth approach to equity and viewing the projects with an equity lens. So the result of that was kind of narrowing it down from, I believe, four or five corridors to one corridor to focus on an area where there was more of a population and more residential and more of a potential impact of folks. Some of the other corridors, as you know, are pretty heavily industrial and probably didn't fit this mold as well. So got down to 82nd Avenue and put some sort of contingencies on there and requirements to work with Metro staff to kind of, collaborate on how the best approach is to empower the community and really do this in an equitable fashion. That's the recommendation. You've heard on the equitable development part, you've heard from a couple folks today talking about the East Portland Action Plan. I don't know if it has a slide, so I'm just going to give a little bit. Okay, yeah. I'm just going to give a little background on why that was not part of the recommendation, and this is not my characterization of it. It's just sort of the conversation that happened at the committee. The committee talked about this a bit and was kind of torn because the committee definitely wanted to do something in East Portland and agreed with the objectives and that the of this proposal. However, the kind of the setbacks were, aside from ADUs, most of the outcomes of the proposal were more academic, not as tangible. And then there was a pretty robust discussion of ADUs and whether or not those were a viable vehicle to meet the ends that were being proposed to be met. So is that for folks who already are, you know, average homeowner, relatively low income investment in, you know, what is a fairly significant development project in your backyard, and then becoming a landlord, you know, while that, A, would that pencil out and create a new income stream? And even if it did, is that going to create more of a problem and more risk and increased debt burden on a homeowner that, you know, might already be facing displacement issues? So that was kind of the debate that was had. We definitely had a committee member that championed it, but we had a plurality that kind of thought that there were some downsides there, and ultimately we came to a consensus around not recommending funding that particular approval grant. All right. Okay, so stepping away from equitable development, development within the urban growth boundary, this was the only application in this category, and recommended approval as a committee. You know, just a comment. There was some pretty good agreement around that this particular application was well written, and the city of Tigard did a really thorough job and good description of what their desired outcomes would be and what the opportunity was. And there's a pretty good alignment between the city of Tigard, Washington County, and Beaverton, who all have territory, I believe, within the jurisdictional territory within in this area. So proposed full funding of that, and with, you know, focus being on being interested in seeing what the vision will become for the future of not just the mall but the surrounding area. Moving on to new urban area planning, City of Beaverton recommended full funding for that. As you can see, that's a pretty large number for the Cooper Mountain Community Plan. The community or the committee was supportive of the work that was being proposed, but did sort of raise the question, like, "Hey, you know, that's more than we're giving anybody else. Why is that?" And had a discussion about, you know, one of the issues was just the scope of it, the number of acres that, you know, need to be planned for. But another was more on the technical level of sort of what are the natural resources and what is the hydrology of the area and the amount of consultant help that's going to be needed to actually map that and figure that out and come up with the public facilities solutions to address some of those hurdles was the rationale for why the committee ultimately got comfortable with that full amount. King City Master Planning. King City's proposing a master plan that will address conditions that this council imposed on their UGB expansion area so that they have public engagement, housing choice, and natural resource protection. Result in amendments to the comp plan, and we thought that was a worthwhile effort to help King City do that as they expand. And then City of Tigard River Terrace Urban Reserve Planning. Again, this concept planning for Tigard's River Terrace Urban Reserve, which is timely because of adjacent development and planning activity that's going on right next to that area to the east. While this is currently outside the UGB, it is adjacent to Cooper Mountain and King City and will be integral in sort of figuring out the public facilities and transportation planning for those areas as well. So we recommended full funding of that. So that kind of brings me to the end of the recommendation. And well, as far as the actual projects, and then just wanted to go circle back to what I touched on earlier about a couple process recommendations. This committee has we have a couple new folks each year, but there's I think four or five members of the committee that have been on it for at least two or three years. So we've gotten a pretty cohesive sort of sense of how this works and have been around since the beginning of the implementation of the equity objectives for this committee, and are really invested in seeing that improved and optimized. And so our the recommendations are revising the evaluation criteria, because right now, as is kind of the default into public contracting law, the standards for evaluation are the same for all three categories. We think that that can be more nuanced, especially with relationship to equity, and that within each category we can come up with some specific standards, and you have to work with Metro Attorney to figure out what the deviations are and how that works with state law and all that, but that's the recommendation. And then really kind of creating a feedback with some of the local jurisdictions on what is expected as far as their approaches and their lens for figuring out, equity isn't just that affordable housing is somehow involved. Equity is sort of how the stakeholders are engaged and how the stakeholders are empowered and who is driving the information that's going into a process and a project, and figuring out how that can be reflected at a higher level in some of these applications. And then cultivating more applications from community. We have the Albina Vision Trust. Can we achieve more of that where it's actually the community formally taking the lead and not just kind of signing on with a local government? And then, tapping the expertise on equity that Metro has here in-house with its core committee. Is that the end of my slide?
Yeah.
That's the end of my slides. Here you go.
I get to close. So I just wanted to start by saying thanks to Damian and all the committee members. As you can see, they're a thoughtful group who really put in a lot of time reading these applications, and thinking about them is pretty time intensive, and we value their work a great amount, so thank you so much. And as you can see, the recommendations they gave us are things that we can actually take some action on. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about how we're going to follow up on the committee recommendations and some of the things we've been hearing you guys raise during the process. So following this process of the awards, in addition to implementing all of the work that we have to do to move them forward, we're also going to take some time to evaluate the program, evaluate the approaches, come up with some scenarios about how we might refine the program. As you heard, the recommendation is to use Metro's Great Committee on Racial Equity to get their feedback. We have a date scheduled in October to do that with them. And then we have a work session shortly thereafter with you guys around proposed improvements to the program and setting the policy direction. We will also check in with MPAC in November, and then in December, as is typical with the process for this program, we will have a final resolution and ordinance setting the policy direction for next year's cycle. So we are very attuned to the issues that have been raised and have been committed to improving and adapting this program to respond to community conditions since its beginning, and look forward to sort of where we go from here. And with that, I think that is it for us.
Very good. Any questions for the presenters? Clarification, Councilor Lewis?
I have maybe a two-part question, both for Chair Hall and Director Gertler. Chair, thank you for all your work. What we as council get is staff report. And we know that there's kind of this box between what happens when you get appointed to the committee and when outcomes come out. I was just hoping you could tell us a little bit more about the process you go through. Is it one big meeting? Are you in regular communication? I just want to know, like, what's it like to be on this committee? A day in the life.
Well, there's a decent amount of homework if you were to print these out and stack up the applications. It's a bit chunky, but we always, at least the last few years, kind of anticipate three meetings, and then it is depending on how well we get to consensus whether or not we have the third meeting. The first meeting is kind of the onboarding for new folks, saying what the process is, getting folks familiar with this is how you're going to be able to access the grants in the online portal, and just the logistics of everything. And then sometime after that, we get access, and there's usually a month goes by, and we have the opportunity to review and score the grants. We kind of do that on our own time. And then we all sit down, down the hall there in a conference room and sort of hash out what everyone's scores are. And, that kind of as chair, my job is to figure out what the outliers are and get, draw people out and kind of get their opinions and see where things land. And, this year we were able to find a pretty good consensus. We did have a third meeting this year. It was by phone because it was a limited number of topics that we were going to speak about, and everyone can quite arrange to get back together again. But so that's kind of the time commitment. And, you know, the first meeting's, you know, an hour, hour and a half. Second meeting's really kind of all morning. I go like 9 to 1 or something along those lines. And so that's what our process looks like.
Great, thank you. It sounds like you're definitely in the weeds, and thank you both for that time commitment, but also your leadership.
Glad to do it.
Part two of that question is, Director Gertler, this is a very fast timeline for government that I see you've proposed on this board. It is all the way into the new calendar year, but it's fast for us. Do you think it would make sense to go back to this committee and make sure we got their recommendations right sometime between CORE and MPAC?
I'm open to that. I think this is our sort of typical program schedule so that we can keep the annual cycle moving, and so this isn't something that we would find difficult to accomplish. I think it wouldn't be hard to add in sort of that time frame, a consultation with the committee. As Damian mentioned, it might be by phone if we can't get them all in a room, although the food usually works. And so I think that would be a great suggestion.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Awesome. Any Councilor Craddock?
I don't have a question, but it's more of a comment, and I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time to bring it up, but I'll start, and then you can tell me if you want me to say something later. So this whole discussion, I appreciate former council, Metro Council Liberty, and coming and meeting with us. I really appreciate pointing out some of your goals and kind of frustrations with the funding of this, of your grant, and so our application. So it made me think about the bigger picture. And I think this is number 7 cycle, am I correct, of these? So we're becoming mature in this process, more experienced. The equitable housing part or development part of it is still fairly new and in its infancy. And this is an example of the discussion we're having here today. It's an example of we still have some things to work out. But I would like us to, at some point, when we meet with staff, to go back and look at the grants that have been awarded and learn what's happened to them, what's the outcome, what are we seeing on the ground, what hasn't happened. Because in this process, we know that there have been several applications that have been funded in the last few cycles that have not come to fruition. And so I think it's time to look at the bigger picture of how these funds are being, how we're funding and the success of them and what are they achieving. Our goal is that each of these are going to create some outcome that cities will implement and make a positive contribution to that city and the communities that they're focusing on. And I want to make sure that we're still achieving that. And so I appreciate this discussion. I know it's been frustrating for the applicants, but it's really kind of pointing out to us some of the challenges that we still have and things that we need to work on. So I'm not quite sure how we go about that. I'll let the Metro Council President figure that out. But I just want to throw that out here.
She's willing to help you.
So not only go back to what Councillor Lewis was saying, but step back and say, of the projects that have been funded, what has occurred? What has come out of this? And then which ones are maybe still on the shelf somewhere and haven't been followed through on? I think that's really important, because that's the whole purpose of this, is to be a catalyst to create change. And I want to make sure that these funds are still doing that.
Would you like to weigh in?
Sure. I think it's actually a great idea to always look at the performance of all of our investment programs. It's something that we in the planning department take very seriously, is making sure we're getting results for our funds. As you know, that is something that we've really taken seriously with this program, and that's why we've evolved it, changed it to an annual cycle, added equity as a central focus. I think most of you know that in 2016, I believe this program was audited by the Metro Auditor, and one of the key questions was around performance. I think you also know that often what we try to do is have success stories come to MPAC and other public forums to talk about the outcomes that were achieved through this work. But I like the idea of sort of doing a little bit more of a reporting style around, you know, where are we this far into our 7th cycle around overall performance, and what can we learn from that? So that's a good suggestion.
If I might just add one other thing, at the committee level, we do consider a lot of those things. We agree that, you know, trying to get funding to places where it will work, and we do have a backwards view as well. So part of that first meeting, and I think that's 2 years ago, and it's a particular request from the committee, was please give us a rundown of, you know, the past 7 years of what's been granted and what's actually been funded and what's outstanding, looking at that from geographic diversity of what jurisdictions have received funding, but also in what amount, to make sure that, you know, we're not outsizing awards to any particular jurisdiction in that regard, but also keeping up with, you know, how are these proceeding, right? Because while the cycle is annual, many of these, if not all of these, take more than one or two cycles to create an outcome. And so if these things are kind of stalled, but then the jurisdiction's coming back for another grant, we want to know that in going forward and saying, you know, maybe next year is the right year for you and all that type of thing.
Good. Thank you. Councillor Craddock, do you have a follow-up? And then Councillor Chase.
Well, I just to add is because the applications that have come forward, they're all very creative. The challenges we're having with some of these is the implementation process. And what can we do differently to make sure that every application we know is going to be successful in its implementation?
All right, Councilor Chase.
Well, I want to start with doing something I've done so many times, which is thank Mr. Hall for his service to Metro, which I think we've signed you up in enough places. You should have an office donated here or a space.
His partners wouldn't enjoy that.
they must be noticing. But it really is an incredible service that you are doing for us here, and it really is an important and valued, you know, guidance for council with the work that you're doing. And I really like the ideas and the recommendations about you know, putting a timeline to rethinking how we might define criteria in each of the areas. I think that's an excellent idea. I love including CORE in that discussion. One thought that also occurred to me is there may be a check back with our Housing Oversight Committee, and there may be something to learn there, because they've really, I think, been identifying, you know, more regional in scope, but that's not out of the you know, parameters of the 2040 grants, some areas where there may be some real opportunity to advance equity. And so that is just another place that occurred to me to maybe include in the timeline. I do want to say something on the proposal, the East Portland proposal. I really appreciate folks coming in and sharing with us. I certainly appreciate the committee's recommendations on that. I also appreciate the issue that has been identified and is really significant, which is, you know, we have this residential infill, something I'm incredibly enthusiastic about, and how is that going to potentially create some negative consequences? And that is very important for us. I think Metro is exceptional in that we don't except that you either protect the environment or build affordable housing, either build transportation systems or protect the climate. You know, we figure out how to do all of those things together. And so, to me, residential infill is a place where we have to make sure that, you know, we're taking advantage of this incredible opportunity to eliminate exclusionary zoning. There are many, many reasons for that, but also to create opportunity to utilize some of our single-family zones in a much more efficient, effective way. At the same time, are we creating these displacement challenges that are significant and could outweigh all of the benefits if we don't do it right? So I think it's really important work for us to continue to, you know, have some dialogue and future grant cycles and look for ways that we can do work in this area. One of the areas that I would suggest, in addition to the excellent proposed ideas that came forward, is around this issue of the complexity of these projects and doing a project. If you are a homeowner of any income level, you're dealing with your regular job on a regular basis, and then trying to figure out all of this financing and all of these complexities. If you're even lower income, you might be working in a couple jobs trying to figure this out. So it is, as somebody who's worked with home buyers and has been a housing developer in the past, I've seen how complicated and difficult that is. I think an additional component that could be considered in that in a revised proposal that could potentially I would love to see come forward would be to really kind of convene players in that arena around the financing. ADUs, just for example, you know, there's also middle-income housing or, you know, duplexes, fourplexes, those kinds of things that will be available. But there are, you know, folks who you can say, here's the, you know, sheet on how to get it, build an ADU from the city of Portland, go get her done. On the other end, there are entities out there that will come in and you don't have to do any of the financing. They'll come in, please sign here, we'll finance it, we'll build it, we'll recruit folks to put in that unit, we will rent it, be landlords, and that's kind of the other end of the spectrum. And so how can we kind of show people as they're getting educated in this system, which is critical, and that's one of the components I really love about the proposal, as they're getting educated, where can they land in what kind of their need is and what pool of resources is available? And I think that's an opportunity where we could really hit the ground running with that kind of a strategy also. So that's just a suggestion and a thought about that strategy, which I certainly understand the committee's recommendation on it. I also think it is a strategy that we want to keep on the table and consider, and I hope that we will see future proposals around that because that's a really important issue.
And just to close this portion out before, is this a question that can go to the presenters or to the proposal that
just
you have?
Noting my place in line, Matt.
Okay. I need to know which one it is because I need to know whether I'm moving forward to deal with the proposal or whether we're asking questions still of our presenters.
I'm not asking any questions.
Okay. Just to round this out then, I think one of the things that we're obviously hearing no matter what the topic is right now, it's either we don't have the tools to deal with displacement issues and we don't have the tools to deal with wealth generation that we need to have, and it doesn't matter what project we're working on, we generally lack that as a nation and as a region, and I think we have the ability as a region to actually push forward. So I think we're going to just have to think really hard because there are going to be a lot of proposals like this to put it in the context of how are we putting all of this into context, because that's our role. So while people can acknowledge an issue here and an issue there and an issue here, how do we work with all of the interests to actually generate the new tools so that our partners will actually adopt them? And that is one of the bigger roles that Metro has learned how to play. But as we look through all of the different things that we're getting asked to work on, those are the two big ones. And so how do we tackle both of those? And it's not going to be all on this grant program to do, and it can't be. So just putting a note on that this is a bigger issue that just needs to be tackled by the region together, and we'll have to find ways to bring that into consideration as we move into 2070 refresh, because there are going to be all sorts of new things coming up, and if we don't have the tools to support it, then we already know what the outcome is. So thank you all for working on this, and we'll move on to our consideration of the resolution. Thank you. You're excused.
Thank you.
So I'm going to call for a motion to approve the resolution 19-5002.
Madam President?
Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
I'm not looking at your screen. Sorry.
No, the way to walk through this.
I've not been.
We need to have a motion on the table before we can discuss.
And I have a motion.
I need a motion approved and seconded to be able to facilitate the conversation and then have a proposal.
I have introductory remarks because I too want to address the committee.
before I make my motion, if I may.
So I just called for a motion to approve Resolution 19-5002, and then we can move to the conversation.
Thank you very much.
Is there a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All right, thank you. It's been moved by Councillor Dirksen and seconded by Councillor Gonzalez, and now we can have our conversation about that resolution.
Thank you, Madam
Councillor
President.
Councillor Stacey.
Thank you. I wish I'd been provided with the script you just walked us through, or I would have been better able to anticipate where you were steering. I appreciate that very much. I do want to preface my motion by joining my colleagues in thanking both the staff and the committee and its chair, Mr. Hall, for the excellent work and a whole bunch of work that you've done to bring forward this slate of proposals. These are exciting projects. They're going to, if implemented well, and we've heard our recitation of reservations about the long list of projects that aren't yet done, that will make our region stronger and, we hope, more equitable. And at the same time, I know I feel the same as all my colleagues, that I wish we would have been able to achieve the full $1 million allocated for the Equitable Development Strategy pool. We all agree, I believe, that it's important to ensure there will be many competitive applications in the next round for funding that will address equitable development and displacement of existing residents that can occur if we don't make progress. And my colleagues have already spoken to the strong elements of the East Portland strategy proposal, so I don't think I have to make my parochial speech about how important I truly believe it is to serve that portion of East Portland that is part of my district. And I know my sentiments are shared not only by the two colleagues to my immediate right, Councillor Craddock, who has the largest portion of East Portland in her district, and Councillor Chase, who has a large portion as well. The whole council knows that this and other areas of the region face these kinds of displacement threats, even from something as desirable in its objectives as the residential infill project and the statewide House Bill 2001. So given the importance of that work, I think it's important that we provide our staff resources to work closely with community partners and help them achieve effective applications and present them to the committee so they can be favorably considered. I want to ensure that there's an opportunity for Metro staff to advise applicants from this current round who were not successful and were trying to address displacement so that they can be successful in the next round. So with all that, I'll skip saying more and simply move a version.
A substitution.
Yes, a substitution of resolution number 19-5002. By resolution number 19-5002A, an electronic version of the clean text of 2A is available electronically. At the dais of each of your seats is a redlined version that shows the additions or changes to the resolution as introduced. On page 2, there are three new whereases. On page 3, there is a new be it resolved that gives specific direction to the chief operating officer to carry out the intent reflected in the whereases. We saw opportunity in this cycle that was not realized. We want to make sure that significant assistance is provided to community organizations in particular, but also to communities the local governments of those communities who want to play in this field and anticipate the unintended, usually, impacts of displacement that accompany well-intended public policy changes like House Bill 2001. So the directions to the Chief Operating Officer are to enhance opportunities for Metro staff consultation with and advice to local government and community-based organizations applying for 2040 grants with particular attention to the equitable development category, and to direct the COO to advise applicant community-based organizations and local governments about potential improvements to unsuccessful grant applications to enhance conformance with the policy direction that will be applicable to the 2020 cycle. That's my motion.
Second the motion that was somewhere buried in that.
Thank you.
For substitution.
Substitution. Thanks for that clarification, Councillor.
Thank you. There's been a motion to substitute the resolution moved by Councillor Stacey and seconded by Councillor Lewis. Is there any discussion. Further discussion?
Madam President, as the maker of the original motion, with one small modification, I would recognize this as a friendly proposal to my motion. But I would propose a small language change. If you look at Councillor Stacey's proposed amendments, if you look at the first additional whereas, in the third line, it has the phrase, including the urgent need for anti-displacement and equity tools that. And I would propose those words be replaced with the urgent need for tools to create equity and prevent and mitigate involuntary displacement, which can be developed for implementation by communities. It doesn't really change the intent, but I think it improves the grammar and, more importantly, has the effect of changing the tone from a negative action to a positive one.
Thank you for that suggestion. I concur that it is clearer than my original draft.
Councillor, can you read that again?
Certainly. Changing the language of the third and into the fourth line with including the urgent need for tools to create equity and prevent and mitigate involuntary displacement, which can be developed and implemented, et cetera.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on the substitution motion without any discussion on the underlying resolution? Okay. I will ask the clerk to call the roll on the motion to substitute with the language modification.
Okay.
Thank
yes.
you.
All right. Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Yes.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. The amendment passes. The resolution will be updated to become resolution number 19-5002A. Thank you.
Thank you,
Councillor Stacey. I will now call for a motion for resolution number 19-5002A.
I so move.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councillor Stacey and seconded by Councillor Dirksen. And the clerk will call the roll on that then?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Wait, more discussion available?
Would you like more discussion on that?
I didn't.
To the underlying resolution. Yes.
Yes. I didn't earlier actually get to ask my non-question question. I was actually asking real questions, so I do have some thoughts.
Oh. This would be the time.
Yeah. So I am really excited that we were able to make the substitution that we just were. But to your earlier point, Council President, the work that needs doing for infill is so much bigger and so connected to so many of our other programs. I know at MPAC we will have an upcoming panel. We will start identifying the tools needed by various jurisdictions, and I'm glad that work is underway. But to the point of some of the other grants that we're able to fund through this cycle of 2040 grants, I'm very excited for the work that's being done considering corridors in Clackamas. Corridors is a word you hear in these hallowed halls often these days. And I'm glad that they are taking the work seriously enough and went through the iterative process with the committee to know to put one foot in front of the other to walk before we run. So with one corridor, I hope in the year's future we will be seeing corridors 2, 3, and 4 come at us. Additionally, we at Metro hear a lot about cities that are contemplating expansion without a lot of thought for vulnerable communities. And I think that the work being funded here today for new urban areas is exciting, and we should champion making sure that people are involved in that process at the outer edges of our region. And finally, the innovation and thoughtfulness, particularly to include NGOs in this round, but continued engagement with organizations that may be applying in partnership with jurisdictions is both exciting and important for us to recognize we're going to have to grow and move with for future cycles. So this resolution captures a lot of the discussion that we had earlier and have had at our work session, but I don't want to vote without really championing what we are able to fund today.
Anyone else? Councillor Dirksen?
Thank you. I would like the opportunity to address the folks who came in to testify for us today. And I just want to share my belief that the recommendation from our committee is not a rejection of the concepts of the East Portland Action Plan, nor the goals that you have for your community. And I believe I speak with the whole council, and actually, as is represented in the revised language, we stand ready to work with your committee and other members of your community to craft an application for the next round that we would be enthused to approve.
And Madam President.
I heard two big intakes of breath at the same time. We'll go with Councillor Gonzalez and then Councillor Stacey.
I just breathed loud. I want to thank the planning department and, of course, the committee for all of the hard work. And I love the chubby stack comment. It's just really sticking with me. You know, I have quite a few of those on my desk, and it seems like they just keep coming. During our work session, I specifically called out and want to recognize how I think some of these grants that we're awarding have very real opportunities for transformation in areas that have already been developed, and of course areas that we're planning to develop, like Councillor Lewis mentioned. I specifically want to call out two sites that I think have incredible potential. Of course, the Albina area and the Albina Vision, and really the looking forward to the investment prospectus, but also a key regional center in Washington Square, and really looking to see what that can become for Washington County, coordinating that with all of our transportation investments and, of course, the investments that we look to make as our region continues to grow. Washington Square begins to become more of an anchor and a hub, and so that's very exciting. Also, to address some of our presenters that came earlier with the residential infill equity grant, I want to echo the comments of my colleagues. And it seems to be a question that if our jurisdictions and our partners were not having these conversations, we now must have them thanks to HP 2001. And so I've spoken with Councillor Stacey and with other councillors about how important it is for us to not only work in coordination with the state in implementing the new rules and updating our local zoning codes, but taking that a step further and making sure that equity is a core value that all of our jurisdictions, all of our cities take when we begin to look at the missing middle issue. So I'm very excited. I think, like others have mentioned, Metro is positioned to do that work, and we look forward to working with you for 2020. So thank you.
Councillor Stacey.
Thank you, Madam President. I, of course, want to thank my constituents who came today to testify. I hope you heard the words of my colleagues of encouragement. I know we all want more equitable development, and we want to avoid displacement wherever we can. I also want to thank my colleagues for working patiently with me through drafts and redrafts. We don't get to do this very often, thank goodness. And so I'm rusty, and you all helped me clarify and achieve the possible. So congratulations to the committee. Thank you to my neighbors who came to testify, and thank you to my colleagues.
Well, thank you for reminding me of Robert's Rules of Order today. So that was a useful exercise as well as a good outcome. So thank you.
You had a better handle than I did.
That was because there was a lot of help. I just want to say thank you to the committee and to the staff as well. Having been through a myriad of different planning grant processes at the state level, the TGM grants, just looking at Carrie since she just came from there, and other grants. I think that this is off to a good start with its first 7 years, and we can only grow and get better from here. But recognizing that that we all need to be able to use these thoughts and ideas as thoughts and ideas, but need to be community-led. And I think that's the difference of where a lot of our work is going, is not that that one group or another group can actually participate in alone, and that we all have to do this together, and everybody has to be at the table, and the decisions need to be really, it's not the decisions, it's the solutions need to come from the people who are actually in need of the time and attention. They need to be able to bring forward the solutions based on the barriers that they're actually facing, not how we perceive them to be faced. So I think that a lot, that's where the growth in all of our programs need to be. And I think that's where we're spending the most of our time and energy, is figuring out how to do that better and better and better. So I appreciate all of the recommendations, and we'll move forward. So with that, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Aye.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. Thank you. The motion passes. All right. Moving on to the next part of the agenda, we'll move on to Andrew Scott, our Acting Chief Operating Officer.
Thank you. Just two quick items for communications. If you have not already, it would be great if you could share with your networks. There's an opportunity to serve on Metro's Regional Waste Advisory Committee. This committee provides input on legislative and administrative actions that Metro is going to consider as we implement the 2030 Regional Waste Plan. It will also help review the region's effectiveness in implementing the plan. I share the opportunity with city and county managers in the region because there are openings for 5 local staff. In addition, the 13-member committee has 3 spots for folks representing interests and needs of communities of color and historically marginalized groups, 1 spot for a user customer of the region's garbage and recycling system, and 1 spot for an environmental or health advocate. Community members are financially compensated for their time on this important committee. So you can reach out to Matt Carratt if you have any questions. And then I just wanted to remind council I'm going to be out next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so I'll miss Tuesday's session, but I'll be back on Thursday before you go on recess.
Thank you. Thanks. Anything? All right, just checking in. Thank you for all the work you've been doing thus far. All right, councilors, any updates?
Oh, I should share with the president. We and a couple of our other councilors, we had an opportunity to host a group of local elected officials at the zoo this morning and have coffee with them and take them on a walk and share the work that's been done as part of the zoo bond measure and also the things that are ongoing.
Good morning.
It was an excellent turnout. Yes. I think at least 30 people, if not more.
Oh, yeah. I think it was, 50. Mm-hmm. It was way more than they had anticipated. and several state reps. So that was good.
Mm-hmm. How's the lamprey exhibit?
Amazing. Mm-hmm. They're so cool.
I was scared.
I love them.
Oh, they're not the most.
They live half their life blind.
Half? Mm-hmm. What happens the other half?
They gain sight.
It's a miracle.
They start blind and then they get their eyesight.
Oh, yeah.
There's
then they mate and then they die.
Yeah.
There's
well, they swim back to the ocean and then they come back up.
There's a video of them climbing up a waterfall.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just the most incredible thing.
It happens at Willamette Falls.
Yeah.
All right.
I never want to see it.
Councillor Chase?
Couple updates. One is the low-income fare task force folks that were on part of that committee and that effort reconvened last week. Ernie from my office helped put together a lunch just to celebrate the work that has been done over the first year of its implementation and to just get a status update on how it's going. There's number of components there, but it's beating its goals. It's still, under 20,000 folks enrolled and signed up. So that is a challenge that is ubiquitous throughout the places and in the country where there are low-income fares, yeah. Getting folks up and running is the challenge that we're in right now, and a very important one. And the more folks we can get to take advantage of the program, the better. And so we talked a lot about how we can help sort of step it up. I think one of the important components, too, was, you know, this year was really a year to make sure the program's running smoothly and well. And now TriMet, I think, is geared up to really start doing a little marketing, really encouraging their strategic partners to sign people up. And so I'm hopeful that we'll really see a nice increase in the number of folks utilizing that program. And you know, I think it's here to stay. It's doing very well, and it's fitting in really well with, you know, TriMet's mission and work.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
Glad you're able to get it back together, yeah.
I also have that the Housing Oversight Committee met yesterday, and Councillor Lewis was there and may chime in here. They had a good discussion. One of the things that I, and they looked at the Beaverton and Washington County proposals, and I think, you know, had some excellent comments and things to kind of include in their recommendations. You know, looked at some very nice proposals from Beaverton and Washington, and they were well-received generally. There'll be more details about that, nuances, as we look at those. I did also, as was discussed at our work session, just shared verbally the budget notes that the council passed that I proposed in this year's budget, just around the work that we're going to be doing in engaging communities through the our diversity, equity, inclusion work, you know, really taking a look at how we're engaging long-term communities in all of our work and doing some of that capacity building. That was one area. The other was really around us having staff bring us some proposals around technical assistance and how the programs that in the jurisdictions that are looking to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion in their programs, such as housing, would be able to access some support if they are identifying, hey, we could use a little more capacity help for this screening criteria or for, you know, some component of a diversity, equity, and inclusion plan. So just shared the budget note that was part of our process with them. They were very receptive to the letter that council sent. And really appreciated the additional kind of verbal information that I gave them. I gave them printed copies of the budget note, but was really, I think, happy to see council responding the way that we did and so quickly.
Good. Awesome. Anybody else? Councilor Gonzalez?
Okay, well, it's been a fun last week in the media, I can just say that. Today I had a great opportunity to be filmed by Univision, actually, talking about the MAX tunnel study, of all things. And so that was really wonderful.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, it was pretty great. You know, the reporter came in and asked, so how much is it going to cost and when is it going to open? And I had the great pleasure to say, well, we're doing the technical analysis to see if it's going to open. So that was pretty great. So that's some good work that's going on. And I guess it just comes to show that people are paying attention to the technical analysis work that we're doing. And I think that's just great.
Yes, there seems to be an interest, a growing interest in that of exactly when it's going to open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Considering there's no actual there and there's no money identified. All right. So let's get right on that. The new tunnel. Everybody's wanting to know when it's going to open. Overwhelming comment and support for a tunnel, yes, for the light rail system, yes. All right, any other counselor? I just wanted to do a quick update. We have selected a new policy advisor for our office, Andre Beeler. I think some of you know Andre from his work in NAMAC at the National Association of Minority Contractors. I'm really excited to have them step in because they've, NAMAC has been a very important partner of ours and continues to be an important partner for us in accomplishing many of our diversity, equity, and inclusion goals. But Andre's skills just basically blew everybody out of the water that was participating in this interview process. So if you see him around the council office, please welcome him. He'll be starting August 5th, and we'll have an actual written statement next week. So I'm excited. With that, any other business before the council? All right, we are adjourned.
It's funny the questions people ask.